Welcome, and thank you for consuming the Thunder Nerds, a conversation with the people behind the technology that love what they do and do web good. We're a weekly, bi-weekly, live audio slash video podcast that started way back in November of 2015. Our mission? To provide extraordinary, actionable takeaways for our audience to employ in the field. These highly valuable and exclusive insights are acquired via our conversation with real people in the design and development community. We seek out the top contributors and leaders in our industry to explore beyond their public personas so we can all gain an authentic view into what makes them tick. We want to know how they got where they are and what fuels the fire of their careers today. That being said, I really appreciate you listening to our first episode. I believe it's important to show your work, and there are a voluminous amount of lessons to be learned within the progress of any project. We definitely came a long way from here, and I'm really happy to share this experience with you, honestly and sincerely. I must admit, it's hard for me to listen to myself in these early shows, yet it's important to provide you the context of how we got our start, rather than just removing these episodes from the universe altogether. Listen, I hope you find our most recent episodes a little bit more palatable to your ears, both your educational and entertainment aspirations as well. All that being said, enjoy and thank you for listening.
Welcome to Thunder Nerds. We are the droids you are looking for. My name is Jonathan Repass.
I'm Eric Chin.
And I am Duke Dr. Frederick Weiss.
Duke Doctor. I like that.
Professor
that
is, Duke Doctor.
I'm already intrigued and I'm buying your album.
Thanks, buddy. I appreciate it.
When does it drop so that I can illegally download it?
I'm thinking February, but who knows?
There you go. It's a good February Fred. It works.
So this is our first ever podcast. This is a podcast for people who are in the industry that build and design websites that want to turn all the nerd knobs. And today, what are we talking about, Eric?
Well, and also, let's not forget the people who are completely outside of it. Ooh, but kind of. I'm going to give myself less credit than I actually have.
Oh, no, I concur and agree. Yeah, so
exactly. Yeah.
If you don't,
I'm kind of like that string that you hang off of your like hot air balloon. It's a part of it, and it's attached, but it's really along for the ride.
I like that.
And to make you go, why is this here?
Yeah. It's a seemingly non-essential part, but would be completely SOL'd if that part wasn't
included. Don't pull the rope. Yeah. That's all I'm saying. You know, don't pull the rope off. Yeah. Don't throw it. You're going to need that to tether you back to the ground.
Yeah. I like that. Why don't we talk about first, Eric, what you were talking about? Because I just looked up Babbel, and I had no idea what it was, and I would love to hear about that.
Are you guys familiar with ECMAScript 6, or I guess as they're calling it now, ECMAScript 2015?
I would like to say no, and fuck no, I haven't heard of that shit.
And let's just assume, based on cursory knowledge, that I'm Googling everything you ask.
Yeah, no, I haven't heard about that. I mean, I started looking it up as you were talking about it earlier, and I'm really interested in seeing what this does. I know the fundamentals, that it's a new kind of compiler, but please continue.
Yeah, I mean, basically, ECMAScript 6 or ECMAScript 2015 is basically like the next iteration of JavaScript itself. I mean, for a long time, I mean, really, JavaScript's the only programming language that the web browser kind of understands. So, and with ECMAScript 6, there's a lot of new features like actual classes that are used in other languages like Java or C Sharp or Objective-C.
So it sounds like it's a compiler.
No, it's well, sort of. I mean, Babel is
the compiler, but this other language you're talking about,
they call
right?
it a transpiler, really. What it does is it takes ECMAScript 6 code and turns that into ECMAScript 5 JavaScript code so that the current browsers can understand it. So that's sort of going to be like a, I guess, sort of like a stopgap so that we can kind of code for the future now.
Gotcha.
And really, it kind of, I mean, it's pretty cool, especially for you know, peeps just now coming into JavaScript, because, I mean, this kind of really levels the playing field. I'm going to have to pretty much relearn JavaScript for the most part to start using this.
You know, it seems like they're always doing that, though. It always seems like they're always trying to, like, to level the playing field and other things like that. I mean, it's got to be frustrating in some cases, but then there are some people like you guys who genuinely, like, I've talked to Fred before, like, and in learning about you, like hearing you, and so that you guys get genuinely excited about them completely erasing history. Like, I love it. It's so good. They're like, yeah. It's like, oh man, everybody's on equal playing field again. And so it's like, how does one measure their penises in this, brave new world?
Let me try to just, so I could try to sum up what you said for sure. People who might not get that. So, and correct me if I'm wrong, but from my understanding is, if you are someone that can code in C or some other basic language, you might be able to use this, but also it's a compiler in the way too that say someone's coding in CoffeeScript JS and
exactly.
This compiles it into regular JS for the browser to consume. For example, like the browser can't consume Sass, but Sass compiles into basic CSS. So in the same way, CoffeeScript compiles into JS for the browser, this will compile into regular JavaScript for the browser, but what you're also saying is, in the future, this is going to be something that possibly, like Sass, for example, the browser might start using and learning how to just use without compiling. This might also be something in the future, or is going to be something in the future that the browsers will start using.
Right. I mean, you can check out Babel at babeljs.io, and they've actually got a link up in the top navigation says try it out, and that allows you to try out typing some of the latest ECMAScript 6, and it'll transpile it into JavaScript, you know, as you're typing. So you can kind of see like what things like fat arrows, I think they're calling them, or sort of the lexical this.
Uh-huh.
So it states on their website, arrows are a functional or shorthand using the fat arrow syntax, which is an equal and a greater than sign. They are syntactically similar to the related feature in C#, Java 8, and CoffeeScript. They support both expression and statement bodies. Unlike functions, arrows share the same lexical this as their surrounding code. So, I mean, that's pretty cool. So if you're familiar with CoffeeScript, you know, it allows you to write much more terse code, and that's going to be native JavaScript. But that's, you know, going to be probably a couple of years away, considering some of the browsers who will, be nameless here. But they're probably going to take a couple of years to adopt.
Well, you know what, too, though? I mean, things are... Chrome obviously is leading the way, sure, and you know they'll be, you know, Google Chrome will be one of the first adopters of this. But who knows with Microsoft's new, what is it, Edge browser?
Yeah.
That's going to be something to where, you know, with IE, you used to have to actually download a new quote unquote version, and now they adopted the same kind of way that Chrome does it now, where it just updates. You're not downloading updates. It just updates.
Oh, yeah, the perpetual update.
Right, exactly. So yeah. Edge will be doing the same thing where it just naturally updates. So, you know, when these things come out, they'll just be available and it'll be consumable for the browser.
Yeah, you're 100% right on that, because they've already started doing that with like Office 360 and stuff like that. Now it's just if you continuously pay, they just automatically just throw in the updates with the newer versions and other things like that. So they're finally just, you know, they finally decided to catch up, it seems.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's great.
Yeah, that's good news for everybody who uses Microsoft.
So. Microsoft.
Oh, we're already gonna drop that.
No hate. Their Edge browser just to state. I mean, in the past, it's been, you know, the bane of our existence, right? But Edge, I was actually pretty surprised by a lot of the stuff. I mean, I've coded some pages. There was one where it was a parallax page, and it was actually smoother than Chrome or Firefox. It was like glass and water. I was pretty surprised.
Yeah, so, well, I think what happened is that they got a fire lit under their ass to do something pretty remarkable and something different. And I just want to reiterate that I think Microsoft, I think Internet Explorer's version 6 through 11, or maybe 6 through 8, I don't think what all the limitations were so bad, and I know they're obviously headaches, but I think those headaches also make people better developers. And I'll argue the point as to that you have to figure out and solve these issues that maybe not everybody could do or tried to do, but it made you a better developer because you found ways around it, whether that's polyfills or different techniques, or a sourcing modernizer. It definitely pushed. It's like with Android and iOS. Like one thing does one thing, and then the other thing tries to do that thing better. It kind of pushes everybody's technology to be better.
Right.
Yeah. I mean, I think it's what separates, you know, from someone being on both sides, you know, of trying to be the alter bridge between customers and actual like designers, front end and back end, and other things like that. Like, it's what separates you guys from the "we'll do any website from $300 people." You know, if they make it too easy, if there aren't hurdles and obstacles to coding and something that makes my skin boil when people say it. You know, but search engine optimization, which is that hurts my soul when people use that as a gimmick. I mean, just code properly and you'll get search engine stuff right. But I mean, like it strips away. I think it strips away a good separation. So it gives you the people who are peddling snake oil for a cheap price, versus the people who actually know what they're doing.
Well, yeah, I mean, a lot of people, I think, just fall into nepotism, right? They're going to hire their cousin because, you know, like you said, like use search engine optimization for example. Like they heard that word or that phrase like 3 years ago, and now they think they know some stuff and they know just a little
bit. What amazing marketing.
Exactly, yeah. Well, but you know sure, they'll get their nephew to build them like some kind of a crappy site that, you know, works, or maybe they'll get their nephew to build them something on like Wix or something like that, you know, which is totally acceptable, or a Facebook page again, which is totally acceptable. But it's not, you know, maybe a custom experience isn't for everyone. And not everyone's ready for that. Most people are just happy with, not to sound negative, but mediocrity and having something that just works.
Well, a splash page. Most people don't realize, like, you don't need, like people go into realtors being the best of them, go into websites and other things like that, thinking that they need something spectacular, thinking that they need some interactive map or other things like that.
Sure.
It's like literally what you need is a splash page. I mean, they're literally just diverting away from what you could get away with on Facebook. Like you may not have to spend this money to reach out to clients or other things like that. Having a website's a great idea. I'm not saying don't have it, but I'm saying like don't go in with the expectation that you need to spend $10,000 on your website that's basically going to tell people, you know, that like, here's my photo, I like to play golf, and I'll get you a house.
Yeah, I mean, and it all depends on the situation, right? Like Joe Bob might just need something to get his brand out there, and that he's a realtor, and that's it, and it just has a link to his Facebook page and maybe a link to his I don't know, his link of listings, and that might be totally fine.
Right, it's credibility. But also, you got to consider that's all, like, most people are looking for.
You know, say for example, like a mom and pop shop. I mean, something off of Wix or their nephew doing it. I mean, you know, and that's sort of a situation. I mean, there's like a very small budget for not only creation, but also maintenance. Whereas a totally custom site would cost considerably more to maintain. I mean, you know, if it works out for the business from a budget standpoint, hey, great. And it's also great for their nephew, you know, because he's learning something new. Maybe he's passionate about. And so, I mean, you know.
No, that's a great point.
You do bring up a really good point. Like, that's something that not to cut you off, Fred, but that's something that I think that we should really talk about, like, especially for people who are talking to clients and customers and other things like that. Most people don't think about the maintenance of a website, what it costs to keep a website up. It's like, you know, the thing is that you pay for it one time. And I think us as people who either represent creating websites or try and sell them to people and other things like that, lead people down this road of once it's done, it's done. That's not accurate. You know,
you're absolutely right. Yeah. Just to throw in, I have an example that it's funny you bring that up, because just yesterday I had a client that, you know, obviously I'm not going to name names, but they have a Drupal 7 site that I built for them forever ago that's totally has a super old version of Drupal on it. Obviously, it could be super hackable because the security updates haven't been done in a while. You know, I could try to make them aware of these things, which I have, but they didn't really get it. And it's not to say that I'm alluding to that they got hacked, which they didn't, but it's just that you know, how do you explain the value of something like that to somebody that just might not get it because they're in a vertical that doesn't have any kind of concept, maybe is the right term, of what goes into that. So, like, just saying, like, you know, maybe at the beginning you have some kind of upfront contract that says, you know, say, you know, every quarter pay me for a quarterly update to your site. So going in and updating, say, all the Drupal modules, updating the Drupal core platform, updating the database, and that's it. And just keeping it solid, say, every quarter.
Yeah, just the... You guys just say it's a lot of people just don't think it's like there's a way to market that or there's a way to brand that in a real world where people can understand it. Like most of us, and I'm sorry, Fred, most of us have a lot of hair, you know, and other things like that. When you get your haircut, usually that person says, hey, you know, you're going to need maintenance. You know that this thing is going to, you inherently know that your own hair is going to grow. If you can teach them that your website is going to grow the internet and demand on the internet and also web and other things like that grows. So in order to keep up with that, you have to have those checkups. You have to have those things. These have to be started to be treated as standard, because if they're not, then you're going to get, you know, that pushback or that not repeat customer. It's like you don't need to think about getting another website. I mean, maybe we need to rescan it or something else like that, but really that could be taken care of cheaply through preventative maintenance.
Right, because it's not a magazine, it's not a book, it's a living, breathing, you know, figuratively living, breathing entity that needs to be updated with updated tech, you know, as technology updates. Technology is, you know, ephemeral. Things die off, things don't last. Things need to be updated. And I just also want to state for the record that my hair grows in very thick. I choose to have it very short. My 89-year-old grandfather has a full head of black hair, so I'm just throwing that out.
Dorothy Mantooth was a saint.
I'll take her out for a nice steak dinner and not call her back. Motherfucker.
Never call her. Exactly. That's funny. Yeah, I don't want to get off on too deep of a tangent on it and stuff like that, but just like, I mean, there's a responsibility, I think, that most people who develop websites and other things like that, they get that tunnel vision of, okay, this is the sale. And it's like, you could have a steady flow of income that would keep you on the career path that you want to go on to. And I'm not saying that everybody's going to bite onto it or other things like that, but a lot of people drop out of the business of web developing or art or other things like that because they can't find a way to put money on the table.
Right, you got to think ahead of time. Service. Yeah, you got to think ahead of time of how you could have some kind of a reoccurring revenue if you are going to be, you know, a freelancer, or, you know, if you're doing something else and you're also freelancing. And I just also want to reiterate that tangents are delicious, so.
Yeah. All right. Hey, so let's try and get back on track. So we were talking about Babel, and we were also talking about that. What other little tricks and trades? You said basically we're developing for the future, but we're also developing for now.
Yeah, Eric, could you pick that back up?
Yeah, I mean, well, basically in a nutshell, it's a way to be able to sort of study for coding in the future. And what's really nice actually is that it spits out legitimate ECMAScript 5, I mean, today JavaScript. So I mean, you could learn how to code in ECMAScript 6 or 2015, excuse me, and use it today, even on a client's site, you know, bearing in mind that you know, taking it to some responsibility that making sure you're not the only person who's on that team, or, you know, that'll sort of set a bar that's so high that, you know, another developer wouldn't be able to come along and you know, continue on with the maintenance.
Well, is there like a task you could run locally? Like, do you set it up to run like within Grunt or Gulp, whichever one you prefer?
Yeah, I mean, if you go to npmjs.org, which is a Node Package Manager,
right?
And that's basically like the Google of Node.js,
right? Yeah.
So you can install local packages.
Could you just for people that don't know what a Node Package Manager is, or Gulp, or Grunt, could you explain to people what a task manager is and what it does?
Well, just real quick, what Node.js is from what I understand, is that it's basically this guy, and I feel bad. I can't. Call out his name right now because I'm terrible with names, but he's taken Google's JavaScript engine V8 and wrapped it in some code that allows it to run right on a computer outside of a web browser, and since then, man, it's just, things have exploded. People have come up with these little packages that, say, for example, like in JavaScript, if you want to use jQuery, or you've got some script that uses jQuery or somebody else's JavaScript, and you're using a whole bunch of different plugins, you'd have to put in a whole bunch of script tags into the HTML page. Whereas Node.js, they have what's called a requirement. And so you can require or state out you require like HTTP for an HTTP web server script. You can require something else, like, say, for example, socket.io. And what that does is that goes, grabs the code and compiles it all to, or maybe not compiles, but allows you to just run the JavaScript on your box without actually having to use any kind of crazy script tags or anything like that. So basically, once he did this and all these other people were creating these sweet little packages of JavaScript to be used in other projects, some other guy came along and he was like, you know what, we need something to sort of act as sort of a directory or some sort of search engine to check out all this stuff that's coming out. And then the guy that created Node was like, hey, you know, this is you know, this is pretty sweet. Why don't we just roll this into it? And so they did. So now that when you you download Node.js, you get npm as well. So if you're on a command line interface like terminal, or I guess command or cmd.exe if you're on Windows, you can run npm space install space and then the name of the package. So say, for example, like you mentioned grunt, you could do npm install grunt CLI, and that would go out to npm. Npm shoots you over to GitHub, and then GitHub grabs all the code from GitHub and installs it right into your box without having to go through like an installation wizard where you say click next. Yeah, click
options. Yeah, it's just so convenient to just sudo that shit in, and boom, there you go.
Yeah, it's pretty crazy.
Yeah, it sounds like just something that's just infinitely saves you guys time. That's the one thing that I saw, you know, watching web developers, especially the back end developers, which bless their souls. It's the rigorous amount of time of coding something and then measuring and whether or not that thing is doing the thing that you want it to do all the way through. And what I'm gathering from this is that literally it makes it so much easier for you to not only do that, see that, but also interact with it in a real environment.
Yeah.
And
I will say that getting the most difficult part about Node and npm, and if you're Googling this stuff, you're seeing all these things, and you're probably most likely coming across tutorials that are saying, oh yeah, it's so easy, just type npm install this, and then you're like, well, okay, well, what is npm? And then you have to Google npm, and then it says, oh yeah, it's your Node.js. It's like, okay, great. So how do you get Node.js? And then it starts maybe talking about what is it on the Mac? It's a homebrew. So it's just sort of like coming across a tripwire, and then
it opens up.
This is cool. Where does this rope lead to? And then you see it splits off into two other directions, and you're like, okay, well, which one do I follow? So that's the most difficult part, is to just sort of is just to kind of get started. But once there's this point where it's like, ah, okay, I get it. It clicks. Then it's just sort of there's this moment of, oh crap. Man, there's so much I can do now.
Yeah, because there's a ton of things you could. There's so much you could do, like you said. Like you could even if you're like not the JS land, but even just CSS stuff. Like all your post CSS, there's tons of things for post CSS. And for people that don't know what that is, that's like if you want to run something that's, for example, adding all your browser prefixes. Like that's a post CSS kind of node packet manager, the task that could be run. So there's so much stuff that you can do with that.
Yeah, it's pretty crazy. I mean, I've been in web for, I don't know what, since 95, and I haven't seen really anything as quite as big as an explosion in JavaScript as what's going on right now. So I mean, it really levels the playing field, but at the same time, it's sort of like the people who are sort of just getting into this, as it's like a sort of a level playing field, nothing really prepares you for the continual, ever-evolving evolution, as it is. I mean, it never ends. I mean, as soon as you know something like inside and out, hey, great, congratulations. It's kind of old now.
Well, yeah, as soon as you know something...
Congratulations, so, you speak Aramaic.
That's why we're doing this, I guess.
Yeah, because as soon as you know something, you find out there's a whole other world of stuff that you don't know. The more you know, the more you know you don't know.
Oh, yeah, exactly. I mean, it's not just that.
It just keeps
getting more and more and more. There's no end to that rabbit hole.
To kind of get back on the other train, because we now have, like, two main things we're talking about. But, what would be some of the advantages of somebody going, you know, I'm writing, say, CoffeeScript right now. Why, what, basically, what, like, what's the sell for starting on, like, using something like Babel?
Yeah, I was kind of wondering that too, because I was actually a late adopter of CoffeeScript, and I really like CoffeeScript.
That's nice.
And especially if you're writing grunt files, because they're sort of in object notation. And man, regular JavaScript having object notation, you get so tired of writing typing out all the commas after every single line, aside from the last line of the object, and it's just kind of a headache. So CoffeeScript is very lovely in being terse. I would continue in CoffeeScript for things like that, just because it's not really going to be used in the browser, but more in configuring Grunt, which is a task manager to help you kind of string all these things together. But as far as using Babel and Babel's not the only one, actually. There's quite a few other ones. Can't really name any off the top of my head, but
Are there a lot of them that are writing in the? I don't even know the language that you were talking about initially. What was it? The new JavaScript replacement or whatnot?
Oh, yeah. I mean, we call it JavaScript, but there's been many different versions.
No. You were talking about something. It was called something with an E. It was something.
ECMA script.
ECMA, that might have been it. Yeah, I'm not familiar with that.
Oh man, I can't even tell what I don't even know what the ECMA stands for. Electronic communication. Oh man, I'm probably butchering this, but note to self: research stuff first. but ECMAScript 5 is a standard that was released in I want to say 2009. And that brought some additional functionality to JavaScript that that we didn't have before, namely things in array, like I think map is one of them, which allows you to run through an array and have each value in the array be mapped to a certain function, and then have that outcome returned back into that array's position.
Oh, I see.
It sort of loops through it without having to write a for loop. And that's really cool. But essentially it's we've been calling it JavaScript this whole time, even though it's sort of evolved. Mm-hmm. And ECMAScript 6 is just sort of like ECMAScript 2015, it's just sort of it's the standardization version. We're probably going to be calling it JavaScript later on. I mean, once it's out in the wild and all the browsers are, you know, swinging with it. But for right now, I guess, as you know, it's such a major change that everybody's, you know, sort of like calling it, you know, how we say HTML5, you know, CSS3. I mean, I don't remember saying, yeah, I code in CSS2, you know, whenever that version changed. I don't remember that.
I think it goes back to like what we were saying before. It's like it's easier just to call something what it was or a different name or something and attach it to it because we fear what's new. You know, it's like, oh, I'm just learning more JavaScript, not like, hey, I'm learning Babel or I'm learning this or I'm learning that or I'm learning, you know, it's like, let's just call it JavaScript so everybody feels comfortable.
And, you know, another point I think that's important to make, too, is if you're somebody that's not comfortable with the terminal, like a lot of people are not, like especially, say, designers starting to code more, which... That's, you know, you're having to, I think, in this industry be more of that kind of unicorn is expected, that you know how to design and develop in many different ways. You could, yeah. There's a lot of apps like CodeKit. Like CodeKit is great. CodeKit compiles your CoffeeScript, your SAS, and it even does post CSS, and it does bless JS. It does a ton of things, and it will continue to do a ton of things. And Foundation 6 just came out the other day, and that also has a new thing. I don't know if you've seen it. It has a new thing called Yeti Launch, and Yeti Launch is basically
kind of like what CodeKit does in a way, but it's a way to start a new project. So like with them, they have their sites, their emails, and their app projects. So if you wanted to start a new website project, you open Yeti Launch, and it basically does, like, you'll see it's typing out all the commands for the command line for you and pushing out the code. So, and it will, you know, do your create your project folder directory, and everything's all set for you. Just like CodeKit will and CodeKit will even do like your SAS watch for you. So anytime you're writing stuff, it just automatically just compiles for you.
Can I say that I want that to be an app like in the game store today, like Yeti Launch? Like, I literally just, like, as soon as you said Yeti Launch, all I could think of is just you control this Yeti's arm, uh-huh, and he just knocks like Sherpas, just all day knocking Sherpas down the mountain, trying to take out people who were just clinging on at like below oxygen levels.
What if his thing was to defend Mount Everest and he's just knocking bitches down?
That's what you're doing. It's basically Yeti Donkey Launch. Kong, except you were trying to keep people away from this shit. Like, we may have to edit this out of the podcast just so that we can create this app called Yeti Launch.
I would
make
fucking
billions of dollars.
I would play that shit all day long.
We have to know somebody who has that shit. We will at least make $10.
Knocking down trees is cool, but just so long as you don't knock down a pine, you know.
Yeah, exactly.
Sort of like
maybe we could contact the people at Zurban and see if they want to go in on that.
Yeah, no, we have to do this. Like, we literally have to develop this. If, like, watch us, like, you know, other than informing the people, like, you know, other things like that, watch us make a whole bunch of money off of a silly idea called Yeti Launch.
Or watch it
where
just get
Yetis
taken.
Like, I would love it, like, if you get extra points, if you get the person who's, like, on support oxygen, because it's, like, you can, like, take their oxygen from them or something like that, and that gives you more strength for some reason.
Oh, dude, I just gotta say, did you cite the One Pine, Lone Pine from Back to the Future 2 just a second ago?
Yeah.
I love that. Did you ever see that? Like, after he knocked down, he ran over the pine tree. Then later on, when he goes back to the mall, I think it's like Lone Pine.
Well, wait. That's the sequel. Yeti Launch 1, The Protecting of the Two Pines, and then Yeti Launch 2, The One Pine Mountain, like, or something.
Oh,
like that.
Man, I was on YouTube the other day, and I saw something about. I don't know. It goes into a conspiracy theory where, like, apparently something about, like, they changed the name from Twin Pines to Lone Pine, and something about 9/11. And I'm thinking,
That was such a funny joke.
I actually posted that on my Facebook wall because I thought that was the funniest shit I've ever seen. I was cracking up so hard.
Same people did a Karate Kid one where they talked about Ralph Macchio was actually the villain in that movie, and it really was true, and that the villain Johnny was actually like the nice guy the whole time, who was just trying to like he was trying to get his shit together, and this kid keeps coming in and just keeps like fucking with him over and over again. Go back and watch the movie.
I hate
Ralph Macchio now. Fucking Pony Boy can die in a fire. I'm glad he got stabbed.
I completely agree, because that guy was so nice to him. Even after the fight, he came up and he shook his hand. He's like, "Hey, man, good match." Like, it was it's so funny watching that perspective.
Yeah, it is. It was amazing. Like, I literally got so jealous that I didn't think of it and put it onto the internet before him. Like, that's how you win with me. If I get like really jealous, like, I saw that, I could have seen that. I'm that smart. Now.
All you gotta do is just go back and watch some other kind of '80s movie, or if you just go back and watch like season one of Punky Brewster, you'll find some shit that you could pull out and be like, "Look, they said it here."
Oh, dude, there was
a Reddit post not too long ago about. One guy who came up with the theory that Jar Jar Binks was actually the ultimate Sith Lord.
What? Do you know who did that first?
One of the things that he was saying was that anybody who does anything remotely that defies the laws of physics, like leaping or whatever, like how Jar Jar Binks leapt into the pond, sort of like hovering in midair as he did these somersaults, or
you know,
being like a complete screw up on the battlefield, yet having perfect shots on every single thing.
Do you know who got it first? The first person who actually mentioned that, and I'm so glad I get to talk about him because he's a hilarious comedian, was James Adomian, where he was talking about Jar Jar Binks being, everybody messes with him, but like Jar Jar Binks was directly responsible for the legislation that allowed the Imperials to actually take over everything. It was his signature when he got made. I'm not kidding. James Adomian, like, go back and watch James Adomian. I think it's like something thoughts or something like that. I'll have to message it to you later, but listen to the whole thing. It is so hilarious.
Let me just make a prediction right here and right now. I don't think anybody else has said this on the internet, and I think I'm 100% right on here. Okay, you ready for this? Okay, the new Star Wars movie. You know how in the trailer they show that guy and he's in a mask and he's like looking at Darth Vader and he's like, "Hey, I'm gonna fix this shit," blah blah blah. And you don't know who it is?
Yeah, Kylo Ren. Yeah,
that's fucking Jar Jar Binks.
Well, okay, let me.
No, that's Jar Jar Binks.
Okay, I would like to adjust your meds. They've cast Kylo Ren, but if that is Jar Jar Binks, I swear to you,
maybe he plays Jar Jar Binks. Maybe Jar Jar Binks never talked like that. Maybe that was all a cover, like kind of like Al Pacino in what was that movie, The Advocate, where what's his name, the one guy from Speed, where like Al Pacino was the devil, but he like
Dennis Hopper.
No, not Dennis Hopper. It was like
Devil's Advocate. You're talking about like Keanu Reeves.
Yeah, exactly. So like Al Pacino always walked with a cane and kind of like, you know, like looked like a not like a very healthy person, but actually he was like, he was just hiding his shit because he was really the devil.
Are you talking about in The Devil's Advocate?
Yeah, I'm just making a comparison.
Oh, yeah, but he didn't walk with a cane in that movie. He was just an asshole, whole time. Like, he was an asshole lawyer. I think a better one would be if you did The Prestige, where he learned his deception from the old man wizard who used to make the fishbowl disappear, and he used to walk like he was a cripple, but he'd have the fishbowl in between his legs the entire time or something like that.
Or like Kevin Spacey in The Usual Suspects.
Exactly.
Yeah, Jar Jar Binks, man. Right. You never know.
Jar Jar Binks is Kylo Ren. If that is true, I swear to you this. I will go to the hospital. I will find someone to remove one of my kidneys, and I will put it in a jar for you as a present. That's how committed to this theory I am.
I will put it next to the other 15 kidneys I have in a jar next to my bed. So I will
for other people who thought you were wrong.
Exactly.
Those people who thought that thought that Fred Durst was really going to make it. Uh-huh. Those are 13 of those 15 kidneys.
Oh, those kidneys are delicious. 3 o'clock in the morning, you wake up hungry. Motherfucker, nothing better. Nothing better.
Sauteed.
Oh, yeah. Fucking just gulp that shit up. Okay, so
right,
I think we were talking about
Foundation 6.
I was. So with Foundation 6, I was just basically saying that just the Yeti launch is just another one of those kind of compilers. I don't know how much we want to go. I don't know how much we want to go back into all that. We probably should wrap this one up. We're already at 45 minutes. Maybe we talk about Foundation the next time.
I like it, but as long as we keep up with Yeti Launch has to happen now.
It's confirmed. We will create Yeti Launch.
We can cut that out because then our podcast is only going to be like, what, 30 minutes?
No, we're keeping all that in.
Oh yeah, no, we're keeping it. It's on the end. It is literally the idea is literally now protected.
Exactly, we're copywriting that. Yeah, you heard it here, so it's safe.
Yeah,
in case anybody from Zurb tries to take that from us.
Exactly. Sorry, Zurb.
Yeah.
You and my boo Renee are not getting that one.
All right. So I guess that wraps up this first
inaugural.
Thank you. Episode of the Thunder Nerds.
I would agree.
Yeah. Thank everyone for listening, and we will. Find some kind of catchy line to say at the end for next time. Anybody else? Anybody else want to say something?
Yeah, Yeti Launch 2016.
fucking feeling it.
Hashtag.
Exactly. Can we air that? Like, can we do a vocal hashtag? Is that, why is that not a thing yet? That's also right. Just to say, you know, that we're, like, because when we start to talk and it's recording everything, vocal hashtag and other things like that, we need to start doing what Taylor Swift did and just start getting words copywritten now, like that way anybody who tries to use it, like we're just and then there'll be cameras with people doing the vocal hashtags. We will get a penny every time.
I like that.